From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
In this episode of Fragmented, we kick off another two-part series. This time, it's with the Kotlin Aero team. And what an episode this lands up being. In the first part, we talked to Jorge, Raul, and Paco, about functional programming in general. What some of the core concepts mean? Do we use functional programming already today? What are pure functions? Do I need to know any hardcore math in order to do functional programming? Immutability, referential transparency. These are all pretty daunting words, but the Aero team break it down and make it really, really simple for us to understand. So we are super excited to have them on this first part. Listen and find out more about the show.
Many thanks to Microsoft for sponsoring this episode to promote App Center. It's a continuous integration, delivery, and feedback suite of cloud services for Android apps that's just going to make you more happier than you could ever be happy. With App Center, you can automate your Android app development lifecycle. You can build, test, distribute, monitor, and push, oh man, to ship 5-star higher quality apps faster and with more confidence than ever. Man, that gets me excited. Building a development pipeline for your Android apps has always been a challenge, but with App Center, you can get started in minutes. That's right. Simply connect your GitHub and Bitbucket repos and build right there in the cloud. Test on thousands of real Android devices. I'm talking the real ones. You press your buttons on the clickety-click, the tappity-tap kind. Then you're going to distribute that to beta testers and Google Play, and you can monitor real-world usage with crash and analytics data. As a fully modular suite of services, you can pick and choose the service you need and connect it to the tools you already use. You know that sounds good. Sign up now on appcenter.ms. That's right, sign up now at appcenter.ms and spend less time managing your app lifecycle and more time coding. Clickety-clickety, clackety-clackety, semicolon. Now forget that, we write Kotlin. No semicolons needed. Thanks, Microsoft. Do yourself a favor. Try App Center. AppCenter.ms. Kaushik, how have you been?
I have been good. How have you been?
I've been very well. Just hanging in there. There's so much stuff to learn nowadays that like it's hard to keep track of what to look at next, you know?
Oh, really? What's been on your mind recently?
I've just been taking a look at a lot of functional programming stuff. I feel like every couple of years I kind of start diving into it a little bit, and then I get confused, and then I abandon it, and I kind of return back again in a couple of years. Do you spend much time with functional stuff at all?
I do. I mean, since the day, I've been very interested in like RxJava, and I've done some stuff there. So because of that, I've been interested in the concept. But I guess like the idea is, for the longest time, we were never. It was more as a curiosity. I was never sure why I was doing functional programming. But I think it's slowly starting to make a little sense. So I think, we're ready to take it to the next level.
Definitely. Well, I think today is a good chance that we can do that because we have the Kotlin Aero team, which is responsible for the Kotlin Aero project here on the show. So without further any further ado, I'd like to welcome Paco, Raul, and Jorge to the show. Welcome to the show, guys.
Welcome.
Hey, how is it?
Hello.
We have to preface this by saying this is the first time we have so many people on call, so we are extremely excited, but this is also a little adventurous for us. So
we have to do a shout-out to Mario Arias. He's been also working on Aero team, but basically he had to drop out of the call because he was too many people.
Well, he's here in spirit. Thank you, Mario.
So before we get going into like some functional programming topics, and I know that Kaushik and I have a ton of questions for you folks, if we could get a little bit of background, we'll do a little bit of a roundtable here to see kind of your background, how you guys met, how you got together in the project. And let's just first start off with you, Paco. Name, kind of where you what you do, how you got into functional programming, et cetera.
So my name is Paco Estevez. I'm a Spanish developer. And basically, I started doing like Android for a long, long while. I also got into RxJava, and my curiosity went into like what is the things that are happening behind the scenes, like what is the technical bits. And through that, I went into the wonderful world of functional programming. So I started doing a lot of that.
Fantastic. Raul, let's go with you next.
Hi, well, I'm Raul Raja. I'm a CTO at 47 Degrees. It's a company that we do consulting and we do mostly functional programming. So I've been doing this for a while. And originally we were doing also mobile for Android and other and iOS. And now we're getting back into that. So now that we're adopting also Kotlin, we got started doing Arrow and all this great stuff.
So. Cool. Welcome. And let's go with you, Jorge.
All right. So hello, everyone. My name is Jorge Castillo. I'm also a Spanish developer, like Paco and Raul. I'm part of the Arrow maintainers and also been part of the development of some parts of the library. And I work mainly as a full-time remote engineer. And I can say now that I will start working for 47 Degrees in less than 1 month.
Oh, wow. Yay. Congratulations.
That was news. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Congratulations. So, folks, one of the reasons why we wanted to bring you on the show is because in the area around functional programming, especially around the JVM and Kotlin, which are very popular right now, given the interaction with Android, there's a library that you folks are responsible for and your team's responsible for, and that's Arrow Kotlin or Arrow KT. And that's, from what I understand, it's a functional companion to Kotlin's standard library. And we kind of want to dive into that, of how Arrow helps with functional programming concepts. But before we really dove into that, we kind of want to just ask a few basic questions, because there's a lot of listeners that are listening to this that are used to writing pure procedural code that are not familiar with functional programming concepts. And so I kind of want to start off with some of the basics. Like, for example, like, what is functional programming and why should like the day-to-day developer care? And if you can kind of give us the example of, you know, of someone who's never used it before, and like I said, they're maybe a procedural developer, what would you tell them so they can kind of wrap their head around functional programming? And feel free, anybody, to take the question.
I think I can help you with that. So if you're a procedural developer, you're basically writing everything in functions and you're in charge of modifying some shared state. The main difference with functional programming is that you're carrying the state when you're moving to between the functions. So at the core level is programming with functions in a way that you don't modify some kind of shared global state. That's like the simplest form of functional programming. From those concepts, you can start building on. And I think like Raul or Jorge can help me evolve this a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also important to know that by history, as mobile developers, we've been probably used to do object-oriented programming, and we have been trying to put all our logics inside classes, and that's kind of the mindset we have. And when you try to move into a functional-oriented style, the idea is to abstract away your logics into functions and compose your code structure by using functions one on top of another.
Yeah, in a way, I would say that the most important aspect of functional programming is try to keep functions pure, meaning that for any given input to your function, you always produce the same output and there is no observable effects in the outside world once your functions run. And that principle allows you to reason about your program, apply substitution, and it gives properties to the definition of the functions, which allow them to be better testable and many other things. So that's kind of like the key aspect of it. And then from there, you can take it and make it, you know, more geared towards mathematics or oriented towards abstractions, and that's where Arrow helps. But basically, there's a lot of people today doing a lot of functional programming while they don't call it that.
That's a really cool idea. But before we even get into that, there are some things that I want to like draw out that I thought were very interesting that you folks said. To begin with, you said like we are all used to like object-oriented programming, right? And I think in some ways we have Java to blame for that, because like Java is all about like object-oriented programming, right? And because it was so prolific, essentially everyone has gotten into this mindset of thinking purely in like procedural programming or like in classes, right? And I think it was one of the articles or like the series that one of you folks released that you very clearly mentioned that, like, you know, in functional programming, classes is typically not that a big concept, right? If anything, we should try to avoid using classes. And I guess it points to like some of the definitions that you mentioned, right? Where essentially we are trying to transform data, right? And state, storing that state and having those side effects is essentially a no-no in functional programming, right? Is that sort of like a good understanding of the essence of what you had said?
Yeah. So one of the main ideas is that you still want to use classes. Classes as a concept is really powerful. The difference is you want to give your classes to your data. You want to use them as classic C structs.
Right.
So you can still have inheritance. You can still do that modeling that you've been told about, like the cat is an animal, is a mammal. You know, exactly. That part is completely okay. The problem with object-oriented programming was when you started to put logic, and then you had your managers, your filterers, your comparers, all those things that do not have a correlation with the real world. So the modeling became a little bit tangled up. So it's not to say don't use classes at all. It's just say let's have a clear separation between the functions that operate on the data and the data itself.
Yeah, and I think it's important to mention that if classes receive their data as immutable and the functions are closing over that data, that's completely fine because those functions are still our peer since they cannot be used without their other scope being constructed, like the class instance. And that's completely fine. I think a lot of people take it to extreme where you have everything as objects and kind of static functions, but it doesn't have to be that way.
So there seems like, I feel like a little bit, and Kaushik brought this up before when I asked him about if he's doing functional, he said he's doing stuff with like Rx and stuff like that, which I'm also doing quite a bit of. And it kind of makes me wonder like, okay, well, what ways am I already using functional programming and the majority of other developers out there using functional programming already and they don't even know it? Can you guys give some examples of that maybe?
Yeah, I think one of the most obvious ones would probably be this high-order functions that the language is providing already out of the box, right? So when you, for example, operate over these collections using the new fancy new collections API and you have those combinators like map and flat map and fold and reduce and all, and so on, all those combinators are already functions that are abstracting away some behavior inside them. So you don't need to care about about the fact that the data is going to be mapped or flat mapped, but just provide the implementation details about how the map is going to occur. So the idea is that the language by itself is already abstracting away behaviors, the functions, instead of to classes. So we are actually already using functional programming in some way by that.
The other part is that I'm asking you how many of your functions actually return an observable right now from your APIs?
That's a good question. Not enough.
Exactly. So what you have is a huge separation between the functions that actually return an observable and the regular functions that are just like helpers and transformations and things that are direct. You're just abstracting away this asynchronous threaded, you know, these many ideas into one abstraction that is called the observable. And that observable doesn't come out of nowhere. No, it was not invented. It was discovered, and it's one functional construct that has been used and is prevalent through the code bases. And if you go to a functional code base, let's say in Scala, in Haskell, you're going to have a similar construct to observable, and you're going to have a differentiation between the functions that are, you get a direct return, like, I don't know, your map, your transformations, and the one that actually return this wrap behavior into an observable, into IO or any other component. So even a single wait in JavaScript is functional. It's based on this concept. So you've been doing functional for a while.
Right.
You just haven't been told yet.
And that's like an interesting concept, right? Because the idea is now, obviously, Kotlin is all the rage, especially like with the Android developers. So everyone thinks that, oh, Kotlin is a functional language. Kotlin, now with Kotlin, we can do functional programming. But really what I'm gleaning from what you folks are saying is we could always be doing functional programming, right? Like even with Java, you can do functional programming.
That's correct.
It doesn't necessarily make it that easy or pleasant to the eyes, especially since like many of us Android developers didn't get like lambdas for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Which is no longer the case. But even so, Kotlin has made it that much more easier. But that doesn't necessarily mean you can't adopt these approaches like even before, right?
That's correct. I think in the case of Java, like the limitations in the past were lack of generics and some of the more advanced features, but as the language is progressing and they're introducing lambdas, generics and all of these, a lot of functional programming is possible in Java as well. And then there's tons of libraries out there like Derive4j that take it even to an extreme where they provide some of the more hardcore abstractions even in Java. So yes, you can do functional programming in Java, and as you said, it's not pretty.
So maybe we touch quickly on some core concepts that I think would be important for us to basically proceed, right? There are like some things that you mentioned, right? You said when we talked about like functional programming, you folks also said, well, it's important for it to be pure, right? I'm curious, can you like quickly tell us, can just like any one of you tell us what you meant by pure functions and why do you think it's important for functions to be pure, right? Because all of us write methods, all of us write functions. What's the deal with making it pure? Like, why is that important?
The idea is that any functions that you use to compose your programming logics should just depend on their inputs, which stands, of course, for the input arguments that they have, and provide a result using them. So the idea is that those functions shouldn't really try to access anything from the external scope, from any external world, we could say.
Interesting. And why is that? Like, why is it important that that happens?
Yeah. When you do object-oriented programming and you have your classes, which are containing some methods into them, the idea is that those methods are usually being used to mutate the state of the shared state provided by the class, which could be just the class fields, for example. So when you're using functions to model your operations, the idea is that those functions are never going to need to access anything from the outside. And doing that means that you are going to remove a lot of state changes on your system. You're constraining all these state changes to a single place by forbidding the functions to access the external world.
Additionally, like if you were doing something like a network operation or any kind of I/O that would be considered impure, that's still okay in functional programming. But the difference is that when you have impure operations, they need to be encapsulated in some kind of data type that is able to encapsulate those effects. And that can be observable or deferred from Kotlin coroutines if it's delayed and not eager, or in the case of I/O. So that delay of effects allow you to invoke your function. Nothing will happen until the data type actually you tell it to run. And that makes the function pure and predictable and composable and substitutable in the entire system. So in functional programming, what we do is like try to push all of those effects to an edge. So describe the application as pure as possible and then have a single point where we say run. And that takes care of the entire program composition.
Fantastic. I love that point because a very common thing that people like usually say with RxJava, right? Like where observables are like, you know, the most important construct is like, oh, like it's functional programming and like, you know, oh, it does like all of the, it follows the same stuff as like functional programming. And some purists usually say, oh no, but observables have state, right? But I like the point that you mentioned that like, yeah, even though it does have state, in some ways it's wrapped, right? Like that state is kept safe exactly. In a way where you're not allowed to necessarily meddle with it, at least in the most normal use cases.
So this kind of makes me think of some of the concepts that we've talked about previously here on the show, and one of those is immutability. And the reason why I'm thinking about immutability is because we're saying how a function must be pure or depending upon its arguments. We shouldn't be depending upon state. So that kind of makes me feel like I shouldn't be changing my objects. And so is immutability fit into functional programming concepts at all? And if so, how do I use immutability in kind of a functional programming way?
The idea with immutability, it's about reasoning again. So when you have these pure functions, right, and the pure functions have an input and an output, and that has to be deterministic. If you have mutable objects, those mutable objects can change in the middle of execution by some external value, which means you cannot assure that the purity of those functions is valid anymore. So that's one of the main reasons. That means that you can have functions that change between threads, that send information, that pass these values around. And those values, you have an assurance that they're going to be a single point in time that is not going to change, and that you're going to have this reasonability about them, basically. So that's one of the key points. One of the reasons why immutability was not adopted earlier as a programming concept, there are two of them. One of them is performance, of which we'll speak about later. And the second one is because they are really difficult It's not difficult, but it's really annoying to update immutable structures if they are really nested. But we have a solution for that too. So we're going to talk about that later.
The common saying is, right, if you want someone to keep doing something, make it easy for them to do it, right?
Yeah.
Because if you say like, oh, this is really important, but like, you know, if it involves 9 steps, life is too short. I'm not going to do those 9 steps. You know, I'm going to take the one that gives me just 1 step. So I'm excited to hear about that. So we've been talking so far about like basic functional programming concepts, right? There are, but as is the case with functional programming, as we graduate, we can get into like really deep and technical topics, right? But a sort of a side question that I had for you folks is, by and large, whenever you read any of the old school blog posts or like, you know, the ones that dive in pretty deep with functional programming, immediately it dives into the mathematics of it all, right? How important is it for me, say, and like for our listeners as Android developers, right, to understand the mathematics to be able to do functional programming, right? Like, and I'm also curious to see what your experiences, what your personal experiences were. Like, did you start off with a mathematics background, which is why it came easier? Did you graduate into that? How did that evolve? I'm curious because in the end, I believe functional programming is a very strong concept and I want to be doing more of it. But does that necessarily mean I have to go back to the basics and like learn all of the mathematics behind it? I think that's like a question many people have.
Not at all.
So basically, you can do functional programming and learn the mechanics without not knowing anything about category theory. You will hear some of the terms because that's the names things like functor, monad, and all those have.
Right.
But doesn't necessarily mean that you need to understand the mathematics behind it. Now, it helps you understand the mathematics behind it because category theory describes the compositional laws of all the objects. And basically, once you understand the basic ones, when you see types in a language like Kotlin and you say, I have a type of this shape and I want to get to the type of this shape, for example, say you have a list of parallel operations and then you have a list of deferred values from Kotlin coroutine async. But you really want, you don't want a list of parallel computations. You want a future or a promise or a deferred value that has a list of values, meaning the join results, non-blockings once they all complete. So that operation, which is so common in daily programming, it really is describing category theory. That's part of traversing, which is a type class that uses some laws and that gives you and allows you to do that operation pretty easily once you have a library like Arrow. Now, you may not have identified that unless you knew the basics, and you may have still code that in an ad hoc manner, looping and sharing state and doing whatever you had to right. get the job done. But that doesn't mean that that hasn't been invented like 4 years ago. So it is important, but it's not crucial. You can still get by just learning the mechanics.
Yeah, because I hear category theory and I wonder to myself, I'm like, wow, this sounds way over my head. Do I need to know this before I get into functional programming?
I think we, the Android guys here are kind of a very good example about this. Because, for example, me, I'm not an expert on functional programming. I'm not very aware of all the mathematical concepts around
it. Many would argue against that, but yeah, sure, go on.
No, but really, I've just started learning about all this since not long ago. But the overall idea to me became clear just by trying Arrow and working on it and asking Raul and Paco and all these people. So in the end, you can definitely understand the main goals of the library, how it works, what is it providing to you, and how you can approach to your daily problems by using Arrow and functional programming. And to me, that's the key thing. What I really like to do always is to try to get as close as possible to the real world problems we have every day, right? Because that's how as an Android developer, that's how I really learned about the real value that it's providing.
This gives me so much hope. I feel like, you know, there's hope for me, so... Can we also maybe touch on like some other few concepts before we dive in?
Yeah.
There's this one concept that I thought, like, because we have our guests and this is my opportunity to get all my doubts cleared, I'm gonna like throw in some things. There's this concept that came in called referential transparency, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can one of you maybe like quickly tell us, like, because I imagine that's very similar to something that we're already doing, but it is a fancy sounding term. So could you maybe like one of you break it down as to what you mean by referential transparency?
Yeah, I would like to answer to this very rapidly. It's to me, referential transparency is a concept about readability of the functions. So the idea is that you're able to tell what the function is asking for and what is it going to return just by reading its declaration. So the reference of the function is being transparent.
Yes, and that also empowers you to, basically, if you have those two functions and then they were evaluated, they produce a value. If you can substitute all references of those functions in your program with the value they produced, then they're referentially transparent. If you invoke them and they produce different values or they change the state, then they're not referentially transparent. So when something is referentially transparent and the compiler, for example, knows about it, which is not the case in Kotlin, but in other languages, you could know about them. You know that once this function has been evaluated, the value can be substituted elsewhere. And that gives you, performance, better performance in some cases, reasoning about the program overall, because you know that it's safe to basically put the resulting value instead of the functions. Yeah, and we can see like a very simple example. If you have a function that basically just add 1 plus 1, the result value is 2. So you can substitute in your program the call to add 1 plus 1 just by 2. So basically, and that's a property because we know the function is deterministic. It's always going to produce the same value. It's not going to change anything. So that function is referentially transparent in the sense that its definition can be replaced by its value elsewhere in your program.
Basically, if I put the same input in, I always get the same output out.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very related to purity.
Hey again, folks. Kaushik here. So that concludes part one. In part two, we actually dive into the specifics of the Arrow library, and that's where things get really interesting. We talk to the team about how Arrow helps with these concepts that we've discussed specifically and how it helps us take functional programming to a whole new level. Why do you even need Arrow? Where does Arrow come in? What is the history of how this library was created by the crew here? So stay tuned and you will find out more.
Hey, I'm back. Let me ask you a question. Do you want to automatically build, test, and release your Android apps? If so, then you got to try App Center. You can connect your repo and within minutes you can build in the cloud, test on thousands of real Android devices, distribute to beta testers, and monitor real-world usage with crash and analytics data. You know that sounds good, don't deny it. Spend less time managing your app lifecycle and more time coding. Now, if that doesn't get you excited, then you're listening to the wrong podcast, my friend. Visit appcenter.ms and get started for free. That's again, appcenter.ms. Thanks again, Microsoft.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.